This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on May 9th, 2013. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
The next item on the agenda is Draft Advisory Opinion 2013-01, submitted by the 1787 National Committee, Inc., by its chair, Emily Matthews, who is here with us in case anyone has any questions for her. We will begin with the presentation by Mr. Buckley.
We have a
late submitted document. Sorry. Okay. Thank you. Mr. Vice Chairman.
I move to suspend the rules and timely submission of agenda documents in order to consider the late submission of agenda document number 13-17. Thank you.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Excuse me for that. Mr. Buckley now.
Thank you, Chair Weintraub. Good morning, Commissioners. Agenda document 13-17 contains a draft advisory opinion that responds to a request submitted on behalf of 1787 National Committee, Inc., which asked the Commission to recognize 1787 as the National Committee of a Political Party. The draft concludes that 1787 is not the National Committee of a Political Party because, without even having to examine 1787's party building and ballot access efforts, the 1787 party does not qualify as a political party under the Act and Commission regulations. The Commission received no comments on the request or the draft. Should the Commission approve the draft, we ask for authority to make technical and conforming amendments. I am happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Buckley. Do we have any questions for counsel or for Ms. Matthews or any discussion of the draft? Mr. Vice Chairman.
I'll kick it off, I suppose. These sorts of requests are not easy on one level. They're easy on other levels. And the issue is whether or not a group of persons, I guess, is a political party or a national committee for purposes of FECA. Under a literal reading of the Act and Commission regulations, this requester is not a political party. Because under the Act, political parties defined to mean an association, committee, or organization which nominates a candidate for election to any federal office whose name appears on the election ballot as the candidate for, of such organization, committee, or organization. So I understand the facts, and I'm going to give the requester a chance to flesh some of this out at a certain point, but I want to at least give the requester some context as to where I'm coming from. My understanding is you don't have a candidate at this time, so therefore you're not a political party. This has always struck me as odd because it ends up being this chicken and the egg where until you're a political party, how do you get a candidate? But you don't get to be a party until you have a candidate. One can imagine Abe Lincoln walking around waiting for the FEC to decide the Republican Party was a party. He'd probably still be waiting because he couldn't be a party until he had a candidate, and he couldn't be a candidate until he had a party. The law was written really to sort of memorialize the existing framework at the time of the law, which is the definitions are really to capture existing political party organizations for purposes of contribution limits and reporting to the FEC. The definition of national committee is even odder because that's defined to be an organization which, by virtue of bylaws of a political party, is responsible for day-to-day operation of such party at the national level, as determined by the commission. So you have an unelected agency given the power to sort of bless a national committee, which is to elect people to send to Washington to run the government, but the government blesses whether or not you're a political party. This is something any third party or new party has encountered time and time again. Reviewing the old advisory opinions is a challenge because, frankly, the commission is kind of weighs a variety of factors, and it's really tough to discern a clear path. But here, I think under the language of the Act, you're not a political party. Now, to me, there's some good news in that because most people, like local parties, they don't want to be parties because then they're subject to McCain-Feingold and much of the restrictions of that, and contribution limits and all this other stuff. But then what if you actually do want to be a party committee? Well, then it's a little bit tricky. So I don't really know what to do other than the Act says what it says, and I want to ask the requester a few questions, so maybe if with the chair's indulgence, the requester could come to the table. It's really a simple question. What does being recognized by the FEC, right? I mean, we're not some national agency that does all elections. All we do is reports and the limits. What does being recognized by us as a political party or a national committee give you that you don't otherwise have? There's an obvious esoteric benefit of saying, hey, the FEC's recognized this as legitimate, but in a country where the people run the place and send representatives to the government, it shouldn't be the government recognizing how the people can organize themselves. So,
absolutely.
So from where I come from, in my views, it makes no sense that that matters as a legal matter. But maybe you could share with us why this matters to you and the folks you're working with to get this out of the gate, so to speak.
Absolutely. First of all, it's really a pleasure to be here today. Thank you for the opportunity. Really, the answer to your question comes down to one thing, and that's money. I mean, essentially, you know, $5,000 and $30,000 is a tremendous difference when you're trying to compete against parties that have been around for 150 years. So, you know, obviously, the paperwork and all the minutiae that comes along with being a national political party, you're absolutely right. That's not something that, you know, everyone gets really excited about. But when it's offset by, you know, $4 million or $625,000, it makes literally all the difference in the world. And there's already such a deficit that we're working against. We all know the rule, the ballot access rules, the debate rules, everything else that we're trying to do, that it really just comes down. It really just comes down to the money that we're able to raise.
So by not being a party, you feel like you're being disadvantaged compared to the established
parties. Incredibly so. I mean, I said in my advisory opinion request that I already have, you know, verbal commitments, and we know how that goes. But, you know, 525 people, that's an enormous difference. And of course, I really do believe I'm an optimist, so I would like to believe that I would be able to do it anyway with the, you know, $5,000 increments, and I will. If that's you know, the decision that the commission makes, that's fine, and I think we will succeed. It just really, really puts us at further disadvantage.
Until you have a candidate, though, you don't have limits.
Well, and that's another thing I wanted to address. We actually do have candidates. There are two things in the draft opinion that I really wanted to point out. We are far beyond intention. It says the mere intention to place candidates on the ballot does not suffice. We are far beyond that. We have 10 candidates that are just waiting until we get this decision to actually declare. All 10 of them have a previous affiliation with one of the major parties, so they have to have some sort of comfort that they have somewhere to go. But we are ready to go, and you know, it's way beyond intention. And I think in the Citizens Party decision, which I think is you know, you guys are looking to as the precedent, it says that they were in the early stages of planning and no individual had been nominated. That's just not the case here. We have 10 individuals that are literally ready to go once we get this decision to, you know, start their process the very next day. So this is, we have a lot of background and a lot of strategy behind how that's going to work going forward.
You're still in this weird chicken and the egg because none of those candidates have said who they are. And they haven't actually said they're with you. They're waiting for you to say, or somehow be able to say you're a real party, and then they'll say they're with you.
Absolutely. It's the ultimate catch-22. But I'd like to go back to the Act itself. When I read the Act, not surprisingly, I read it a little bit differently. One of the purposes of a national political party is to nominate candidates, certainly, but I do not read that law as you have to have already had one on the ballot. I mean, to me, that's a big distinction. That's a big leap from that's one of the purposes to... That's one of the requirements, and I just don't read it that way. And if that's the only thing in between, you know, the decision, I feel like we've really moved beyond that, in just far beyond the intention. We actually have commitments by these candidates.
Concern I have is, let's say someone comes in tomorrow with essentially the same request, but really wants a different result, and they want to say they're not a political party because they don't want contribution limits. They're going to look to the Unity 08 case where the commission had originally said there were limits, even though the Unit 8 didn't have candidates. That was sort of a quasi, I thought of that as a quasi-party. They were sort of a draft committee.
Right,
trying to start a third way going. And the D.C. Circuit said, we don't have limits until you have a candidate.
Right.
So someone comes in, sort of Unit 8-2, and says, we're doing the same thing you're doing. We have a lot of candidates lined up, but they're not actually publicly candidates yet. They're not with us yet. We don't want to have limits until they actually publicly say. See, so there's a tension even within.
But they do have limits and as a PAC.
No.
Well, the fact that, I mean, well, depending on what kind of
unless they make contributions to candidates, they're right. You know, if you watch Stephen Colbert, that's not really the best place to get, you know, detailed
right.
up. But the idea
but,
of
but I mean, any time, I mean, whether you're a party or a PAC or an individual, you're always going to have a limit, or you're always going to be governed by one aspect of the rule. So it's not as if this would disqualify somebody from being governed by the commission.
Well, you'd still have to, if you because you have filed as a non-connected committee, right? So you're filing mm-hmm. the PAC reports, but post Citizens United and post Speech Now, if you're not making direct contributions to candidates, and assuming you're not because you don't have candidates, there's no basis to justify a limit. So I would think you're sort of like akin to what the press calls a super PAC. So you're not limited to $5,000 bites to get your house in order.
Right.
But that
right.
limit would kick in once you do have a candidate. So what I'm saying is somebody could come in and say, gee, we don't really have candidates yet, although we have some people potentially. We don't want to have limits until we actually have a real candidate.
But they would be governed under the super PAC rules then. I mean, in other words, I don't know why this decision would affect why one would affect the other. Because they're still going to be governed by one of the rules, whether it be PAC, super PAC, or party.
I could see someone on the same facts not wanting to be a political party. You want to be a political
right,
party for
right.
political reasons.
And
they don't want to be a political. They want to stay as far away from the FEC political party status as possible
okay.
because they don't want to get caught up in, you know, federal election activity rules and all that kind of thing. So that's my concern is declaring you a political party may then create a precedent that declares other people political parties that really aren't political parties. Does that make sense?
Well, I would think that if, I mean, I would still think that, I see what you're saying.
See, I don't want to say no to you today, although the draft says no, and I could probably support the draft with there's a footnote I don't like that sort of reaches the national party issue. But what is clear is if folks have come back and they, you know, facts change, I don't want to lock you in, you know, and maybe if we have a little bit more discussion on how close are you to having candidates?
I mean, they are ready to go tomorrow. I mean, like I said, we are far beyond intention. Everything is complete, you know, fundraising, candidates, state party committees, all those things are, we've been working on this a really long time. They are ready to go. We've been waiting purposely for this decision because it really, even at the state party committee level, there's been a lot of confusion as to how they file. You know, it's been very unclear as to how to proceed.
Right. Even getting ballot access, they say
right.
we're not
I mean,
a party, and
right.
what we are. But
because when I go to people
said,
and say,
yeah.
you know, sign this petition, and then I always have to have the caveat, well, we are a national political party, be it marketing, but the FEC does. I mean, it's all this explanation that it's hard enough to get 50,000 signatures anyway, you know. And I guess what I would say, going back to your question before, is I would think, especially in the current environment, that our goal should be to encourage as many people as possible to become part of the democratic process in however way that looks. And so if 1787 doesn't work out, there's been no harm. There's been no harm done, as far as I can tell, in letting us at least have a shot to proceed.
I hear you. I mean, more participation is the preferred outcome, and that's why I started with my frustration with, you know, when you read the act literally, It seems to assume the answers to the question it's asking, right? I mean, and having tried to get people on the ballot before, it's not easy, particularly if you're not with a party.
Right.
And how do you get to be a party? Well, you need a candidate. Well, you don't get to be a candidate until you're a party.
Right.
And, you know, when some say that a lot of this law is incumbent protection, or, you know, this is an example they tend to cite of it seems like it keeps people from coming in. If you had one person actually publicly say that they're a candidate for, because whether or not the FEC recognizes you as a party, you can still be a party. You can still call yourself a party,
right? Exactly.
And says, I'm a candidate for nomination of this political party. I mean, but then the act says they have to nominate a candidate. I mean, this is what gets tough. So, can you give me any more on how close you are to getting to get this within the reach of the act?
I know you're having to take my word for it at this point, but that we really do have 10 ready to go. I've been actually trying to think of how I can, you know, because it's an open forum. You know, certainly another thing we don't want to do is give our entire strategy, and you know, again, that would, you know, we've had to create a very creative strategy to even think about being able to compete. So that's certainly not something that I want to divulge all of. But if there's any way that I could, you know, privately give you guys some information, I don't even know if that's a possibility. I doubt it is. But because believe me, I understand your position as well. I really do. And it is a tough one. But you ask, I do want to revisit also, it is actually, there's another reason besides money that we want to be a party. In this current environment, I really believe, and everyone involved in 1787 believes, that there really is not going to be significant change in the dysfunction of this system until we have additional choice. And you know, I believe that from the bottom of my heart, wholeheartedly, that is the only way that we're going to break the dynamic that's going on. And we believe strongly that we have, you know, that this has never been tried before. The 1787 model has never been tried before. You know, whenever there's been third parties in the past, it's usually ideology that's very close to one of the other two parties, or, you know, or a single issue. And that is, that's just not our model, and that's not, you know, how we plan to proceed. So that's probably even a much more important part of why we want to be a party.
Have you come within the definition of political party under any state laws that you know of?
Mm-hmm.
Which states?
I don't have. I can send that over. I don't have that with me.
But,
of course, that they vary so often. Because I'm having to deal with all 50. But I do have that. I do have that information.
Because in those states, you could still probably then have a candidate, regardless of what we do here.
Well, but I would still be bound by the limits.
To get the candidate, you'd have a different limit, right? And that's really, it's almost a timing issue,
right?
More than a chicken and the egg.
That's exactly right.
You have state X under state law. You're recognized as a party. You can be a candidate. As soon as that person says he's a candidate, you're going to have a lower. You're not going to have the benefit of the federal limit until we get back around to it in another AO, which could take...
Well, and that's another thing I was going to mention, too. So let's say that, you know, I get a candidate to declare, you know, tomorrow. Okay, that's great. I leave here and say, okay, go for it. Let's go. That's another, you know, three months, or, you know, 2 to 3 months probably. That's valuable time. I mean, we have got to get started. We have got, you know, we are, you know, getting to the point where it's really critical that we have the time to prepare for 2014.
I mean, it is an advisory opinion. We're not a court. There's no case or controversy requirement here. I mean, I guess we could say something along the lines of, if you do have a candidate as represent, you know, when that happens, then you are for
that would be wonderful.
Limits.
That would be all we would ask for.
I don't know if anyone else is comfortable doing that. It's kind of a curveball I'm throwing here at the open meeting. But when you look at the old AOs, they're all over the place.
We would be absolutely thrilled with that.
I really hadn't thought before we got in here and had our discussion about the contribution limit issue, because I came at it from, well, if you don't have candidates, that's good news. You can just run the Unity 08 case right till a lot of daylight and raise all kinds of money. And then once you sort of get your ballot access program all set and you're all that, then you have candidates and the limits kick in and you're already kind of have a head start. But what you're saying is the way you're rolling out your model, the contribution limit is essentially keeping you from doing what you want to do.
Right.
Whereas people doing essentially the same thing have a different limit, so they have an advantage.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And actually, as a philosophy, as a philosophy, do not agree with the super PAC model, and so we just don't want to go down that road at all, just in terms of philosophy. And
okay.
Commissioner Walther.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm very sympathetic with where you're headed, but it's a concern to me that we're just stuck with some of the language here, and it's hard for me to divine a way to get around it.
Right.
And when you look at subparagraph 16 of 4-1, it says, the term political party means an association, committee, or organization which nominates a candidate for election to any federal office whose name appears on the election ballot as a candidate of such association, committee, or organization. And it's difficult to, I think, get around that language and some of the language that we had before, until such time as the party has received, this is the name of the party, citizens, the party has received verification from any state election official that a citizen, that a citizen's party candidate for federal office has satisfied the ballot access requirements in that state, and that the candidate's name will appear on the election ballot as a Citizens Party candidate. The Citizens Party does not qualify as a political party under the Act. I mean, obviously, when that occurs, then our position could be different, but it sounds to me like you might be getting close to it, but you're not there yet.
Well, I'd like to point out that the Citizens case is precedent, and that's the very idea of a precedent. There's always a first time. I mean, so the second part of your statement, I would say that there can be a new precedent set. In terms of the language, I would like to go back to what I said earlier. I really read that language as that is one of the purposes for a party to put candidates on the ballot. I still do not read that language as you have to have one before you do it. But if you do, read it that way, that would actually be solved by the putting in the language that once we have a candidate, that would trigger, we could put some trigger language in.
Mr. Vice Chairman.
But, looking back to the Act, it talks about nominates a candidate for election to any federal office whose name appears on the election ballot as the candidate for such association, committee, or organization. You could read that literally to the point where you say, well, the contribution limit doesn't go up and you don't become a political party till the government actually prints the ballots, because his name has to appear on the ballot. Now, that makes no sense that somehow the folks currently running the show, so to speak, can determine your contribution limit when you're trying to essentially overthrow the current regime, right?
Exactly.
And I think the reg softens, I think the AOs soften up a little bit, it will appear on the ballot. But what we have here is what you're representing to us is that someone will.
Yes.
You're in this chicken and the egg, and it's really a contribution limit issue, and it's just a question of when you get the benefit, so to speak, of a party limit versus a PAC limit.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think it's totally consistent with the Act to say once you have that candidate, and consistent with past AOs, then you are a political party, right? I mean, the draft AO says the commission has never recognized an organization as a political party without the organization first placing identified federal candidates on the ballot. True, but if you do have a candidate saying, I'm going to be on the ballot, then it becomes a question of timing as to when I'd be comfortable saying at that moment, then your party and the limit goes up, which seems to be what you really want.
That's not some big
theoretical test
Absolutely
case. It's just
not.
Really
that, that's
it's,
all
a,
we're
it's a very nuanced
for.
Point.
Yes, without having to come back would be a huge advantage.
And it doesn't really take you outside of what the commission's done before. You're just asking for really. The only difference is the timing issue.
Exactly.
Instead of having to come back a couple times with more facts, what you're saying is we're real close, and once we're there, can't we just proceed as a party committee and amend your statement of organization, and you won't get in trouble, and you can take more money, and it seems fine to me. That's why the opinion's advisory.
That's all we ask for.
Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I want to have a question for counsel. on the proposal that the vice chairman has set forward about kind of almost a contingent answer and what the precedents are for that. I was just looking at the 1980 Citizens Party AO, and just on page 2 of that, it mentions how they hadn't qualified as a political party yet because they had not, at that, no individuals have been nominated as candidates of the party in any forthcoming or previous federal election. Then the next paragraph, it says documentation provided by the committee does, however, demonstrate that it is engaged in sufficient activity on the national level to qualify as the national committee at such time as the Citizens Party qualifies as a political party. And then in the next paragraph, it says, thus assuming that the Citizens Party proceeds on a continuing basis with implementing its stated plans with regard to party building activities, the commission concludes that the executive committee of the Citizens Party would qualify as the national committee of a political party when the Citizens Party attains political party status under the act. And so I just wanted to ask counsel if I make sure I'm reading this right, that it does appear as if the commission has on a previous occasion say, you're not there yet, but once certain events happen, you will be a political party. Well, in this case, it was looking more at the national committee question, but just wanted to get your any thoughts or analysis you have. Am I reading that correctly? And if so, that would seem to be at least a precedent for granting a contingent answer in an AO.
Mr. Naughty.
Thank you. Yes, the that prior AO did give a sort of contingent answer based on what the requester's plans or intentions were, and the draft AO does the same in footnote 3, reaching the opposite conclusion, that even if this requester were to qualify as a political party, they would not, as the facts are currently described, qualify as the national committee of a political party and therefore would not be entitled to the increased contribution limit.
Which is, I think, the footnote that the vice chairman mentioned that he had some concerns with, just because the in trying to decipher what the governing principle on what makes one a national committee and what doesn't is a little bit somewhat elusive when going back through all the old AOs. But it seems to me that it wouldn't be inconsistent with how we've done things in the past. We could even put a sentence in after at the end of line 17, after we've said that accordingly 1787 is not the national committee of a political party, or maybe even earlier saying, but once they have nominated a candidate, they would be, kind of following kind of the model that was set forward in the Citizens Party. And if I understand from requester's counsel, that's you want something on paper indicating that, okay, once we meet certain thresholds, we will be a political party for purposes of, you know, I guess giving a sufficient level of comfort for your prospective candidates to actually formally announce and to move the ball forward on that front. Is that...
That is correct.
Okay.
And I do believe that would do it, absolutely.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Counsel?
The sentence on page 3 of the draft at lines 13 to 14, that first clause was intended to address the qualification as a political party, saying, it's worded in the negative, but saying once you place somebody on the ballot, you're going to qualify as a political party. To be clear, though, that there's two requirements there. There has to be a declared candidate, and the organization also has to have ballot access. Has to actually qualify, get the signatures to qualify for the state ballot. That's, of course, a separate inquiry from the national committee status.
Mr. Vice Chairman?
How close are you to ballot access anywhere?
Well, we have... That is something that we'll have to start now. We like I said, our state committees are ready to go tomorrow, and then they will start that. We haven't been able. I really haven't felt comfortable starting that. I didn't even know how to pose it to people to ask them to even sign something.
Yeah, how do you sign a petition for ballot access?
You can't start that process.
For a candidate that doesn't exist.
Exactly.
I mean, I guess in theory you could, but who's going to sign the petition? You need a candidate, and then so it ends. You're still in that same circle of.
And like I said, that process is daunting enough without having to sit there in a parking lot explaining to people that there's all different sorts of, situations going on in terms of, you know, what your status is.
Well, while people are pondering, let me weigh in. First of all, thank you for coming. Thank you for submitting the request. I appreciate your enthusiasm. What I'm hearing, though, are a lot of policy arguments for why it would be a good idea for us to grant your request. But when I look at the law, I mean, it's not. It's not just a random description of, this is one of the functions of a party. That's the definition in the Act. It's in the definition section. And Congress, in its infinite wisdom, has decided that this is the definition of a national political party. We have a practice here of not granting hypothetical answers. I mean, and I suppose we could say, here's the law. As soon as you comply with the law, then you'll be complying with the law. But that's not a very satisfactory answer, I think, for anyone, because we're not taking into account what you have actually done at that point. I don't think anybody here wants to say that you could you're out of the box. You can't be a political party. It's just a question of following through on the criteria that are set forth in the statute for becoming a political party. And I don't know that, you know, sitting here at the table today, I can say that I know enough about what you will do in the future to say at what point that will happen. I think it really would fall, again, into the more hypothetical category. I mean, it sounds like what you're saying is you've got a lot of great intention and enthusiasm, but what I heard you say just a minute ago is that you haven't actually begun to take any steps towards getting ballot access yet.
Well, again, how could I possibly do that? I mean, because the whole ballot access, as you guys know better than I do, the whole ballot access procedure is to go and have people sign a petition for what? I mean, sign a petition for the 1787 party that might be a party and might not be a party. You know, it's very, very, very vague, in my opinion, on what that looks like. And I think that we have gone far beyond hypothetical and intention, far beyond that. And again, I'll just repeat myself once again about the law. That's why we have court systems and things like that for interpretation of laws. I do not read the law. Please don't think that I said that because I didn't intend to take this further. That's not why I said the court system. My whole point was that's the interpretation.
You're welcome to take it to court.
No, I did not. I did not want to. I did no way wanted to make
it
sound
offended.
Like that. No. But my point is that's why we. I mean, everyone's interpretation of the law can look very, very different. And I still do not read that statute as you have. I don't think it says you have to have a candidate on the ballot. I think that it says that I read that as more purpose. That is the purpose of a national political party.
But it doesn't say the purpose of a national political party. It says means. It's the definition.
Right, which means if we put the trigger in there, that solves that. If you put the trigger in when we have a candidate, that not until that time, then that to me that solves that problem.
As I said, I mean we could issue an AO that says the term political party means an association, committee, or organization which nominates a candidate for election to any federal office whose name appears on the election ballot as a candidate of such association, committee, or organization. Once you meet that definition, you will be a political party. But I don't see how that does you any good at all, because somebody still has. I mean, you and I have a different reading of what that even means.
Well, I know you guys are just having to take my word for it, but I know that I have that tomorrow. So that helps me tremendously. I mean, because I know that I do have candidates that as the day after we get this opinion, we do have that. So it helps me tremendously as opposed, and because, you know, if the law said you have to be on, you have to have three state committees and you have to have one candidate and you have to do this and that, it doesn't say that. And so what that's going to lead
me.
No,
it says this.
No, that's exactly right. But what that's going to mean is when I come back, you know, I'm going to have to do this back and forth that just takes very precious time. That's my concern. I'm working at a big deficit here with very, very little time. And so if I have to continue coming back to get this status, you know, that really causes even more difficulty upon a very arduous process, and, you know, that we already have a daunting task.
Commissioner Walton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, my concern is just where we have the language of the statute, and I really don't think it would be eviscerating the statute. You can read the statute to somebody and say, once we do this, we will be a party, and then we'll do some more and we'll be a national party.
So I'm going to stand in a parking lot and try to get them to sign, you know, and like read this, and that's really the whole ballot access is not conducive.
I don't know if you have to be in a parking lot or not, but the bottom line is there's a requirement here that however the people may gather and give it a name and decide to put somebody on the ballot, that would be what happened, whether you call a meeting and you get 100 people there or you get a lot of people there, or you put an ad in the paper and you have stuff. It doesn't have to be in the parking lot necessarily.
Well, I know Texas, that maybe that's what in, you have in Texas, mind, you have to have 50,000 signatures for ballot access.
Well, maybe that's another state you want to go to.
Well, I want to go to all 50 states. I mean, that's our goal. And so when you multiply, you know, Texas is just one state. California is over 1 million signatures. The ballot access process, as you guys know, is a huge uphill battle. So to get the signature in the first place is very, very difficult and very time consuming. One signature, much less having to explain FEC rules that people don't, you know, that are very unfamiliar with in the first place.
Well, I'm comfortable with the opinion that we've got there before us, too, and I'm going to move that we approve it.
Mr. Chairman, I should state that Commissioner Walther has moved approval of the draft AO 2013-01. Obviously, discussion of the motion is in order, Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you. Unfortunately, I can't support that motion. For no other reason, the motion includes footnote 3, which an issue we don't need to reach within the four corners of this AO. The federal government doesn't tell the people who's a party and who's not a party. The FECA definition is not Congress deciding who gets to play in the game and who doesn't. We're sort of inverting the law when we kind of say, well, Congress has defined party committees and that's it. What Congress has done is they put forth a definition that says if you come within this definition, then you're subject to certain contribution limits, certain other restrictions, certain reporting obligations. I mean, that's really all it does. It doesn't go any farther than that. It always amazes me when folks from other countries come and they want to meet with the commissioner, and I rarely do it. Chair tends to handle most of those, but I'm not quite the international traveler that the chair can be, but.
Usually they come here.
They're always right, but they do get hung up on they're fascinated that the FEC doesn't count ballots and that there's not a national agency that controls all elections. And it's very tough to explain to them that no, see, the states send representatives to DC, and that so the federal government doesn't pick who is in the federal government. It's just not how we do it here. It's much more of a ground-up system, not top-down system. And the Reed FICA is sort of saying, well, you know, the Congress has defined a party. That's more of a top-down system. We can't have it both ways, though. We can't say, well, you're not a political party, but then you have contribution. You're not a political party because you don't have ballot access and you don't have candidates. And then say, but you have a contribution limit, so you are going to limit the amount of money that you can raise to get ballot access. When you have super PACs that can raise and spend whatever, and they don't have candidates. So this is why I started out with, I think you don't have contribution limits until you have a candidate. Now, that's not necessarily satisfying because it probably doesn't fit in with how politically you want to do things.
Right.
But it is addressing the issue that we can address here at the FEC, which is the financing of whatever it is you want to do. And if there's not a limit, at least you can raise money to get the ballot access going, I guess. So we can't say, well, you're not a party, but then also, well, you have a $5,000 limit. It just doesn't make any sense, right? So to me, it's a better result, and I think consistent with the commission has done before, is to say something along the lines of you don't yet come within the definition of political parties. Not that you don't qualify as a political. We're not qualifying political parties at the FEC, right? We don't do ballot access here. We don't. States qualify candidates, not the FEC. You either come within the definition or you don't, and so you're not yet a national committee. I know Commissioner Peterson has, you know, he was making similar edits independent of each other up here. But what I would ask is this. I can't support the current motion after that is decided. Maybe if we take like a 3 to 5 minute recess, and we may have a proposed motion back.
We might consider. I'm happy to take a 3 to 5 minute recess, or even longer. We might consider it a friendly amendment, and you know, we have been.
I'm
open to
motion.
I'm open to that kind of language, and I'm willing to take footnote 3 out.
Yes, maybe we take a 5 minute recess.
We will take a brief recess.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, recess is over. Unfortunately, we didn't get to go play outside. Do we have further discussion on Commissioner Walther's motion or proposed friendly amendments? Mr. Vice Chairman.
I'll try a friendly amendment. If I don't get it right, I'll welcome other friendly amendments to the friendly amendment. Look at page 3, lines 13 through 17, that paragraph. The line 15, the sentence begins thus, where it says, thus, the 1787 party does not qualify as a political party under the Act and Commission regulations. Edit that to say, thus, the 1787 party does not yet come within the definition of political party under the Act and Commission regulations. And then line 16, accordingly, 1787 is not a national committee of a political party. Insert the word yet. My understanding, and not everyone has said, but I don't put words in people's mouth. My understanding is there's three commissioners would be willing to go a little more and say, once there's a candidate on the ballot, you are a party. But to get the protection of an AO, the Act is abundantly clear. It takes 4 votes, and there's not 4 commissioners for a variety of reasons comfortable with that. Not in a reasonable position. It just, you know, kind of the way it is. It's unfortunate. But that's what we're really here, whether you get the protection of an AO. Not that you can, we're not deciding you can't do things or anything of the sort. But we'd be willing to go more, and some people like that guidance because then at least they can kind of sense where the votes are. I think once you do come within prior AOs, then once you get a candidate and the like, then I think there's, then you can rely on those AOs. Under the law as well, but today there's just not enough comfort with sort of a contingency plan. So that's my friendly amendment with a little explanation, and hopefully I captured the gist of what we're trying to where we actually can agree.
I believe you also wanted to delete footnote 3.
Yes, and I delete footnote 3. Yeah, thank you.
So we're really putting a couple of yets in the last sentence of the paragraph.
And changing qualify to come within the definition, which I think everyone is comfortable with.
Yeah. If I could, in line 13, the same thing where it says to qualify is just come within the definition, mm-hmm. similar edit. So.
Same thing on page 2, line 13. There'd be three places where we've used that language.
Yeah, thank you. Yep.
So as I understand the motion, as it has now been modified by friendly amendment, the motion is to approve the draft of advisory opinion 2013-01 with the deletion of footnote 3 and the substitution of the phrase yet come within the definition every place in those three places in the draft where the word qualify is used on page 2, line 13, page 3, line 13, and page 3, line 15, and to add the word yet at the end of the sentence, that's the last sentence on page 3. I captured all of the edits. And I do want to reiterate something that the vice chairman said earlier. This process is just for you to get confirmation of the commission's interpretation of the definitions under the Federal Election Campaign Act, which governs campaign finance. Ballot access, how you define yourself as a party at the state level, what you tell people in parking lots or anywhere else. That's not what we're telling you. All we're doing is interpreting the Federal Election Campaign Act. You're not required to come in here and ask us for that, but you have. So this is the best we can do to answer your question today based on the information that we currently have in front of us. Commissioner Walther.
Yes, and as the vice chair pointed out in the 1AO that was for Citizens Party, following the AO, a certificate was obtained from the State Board of Elections, and that was the procedure that was followed in that case for edification.
Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thinking of if the requester has to come back timing-wise, if there's an ongoing primary, there are procedures to do expedited AOs and the like. And certainly, if the event you have to come back, certainly move as quickly as I can. I think we all would to not get in the way. So I just want to raise that when things become more imminent, we do have procedures that allow for things to move quicker.
And even aside from the 20-day provision in the statute, the commission has on various occasions tried to do AOs within 30 days rather than the statutory 60 days just to, where people feel that they need us to move a little faster. We do try and accommodate those requests. Obviously, if you do choose to come back, it won't be the first time we're looking at this, so that should also help to expedite any requests. I don't think anyone at this table wants to interfere with your ability to go out and try and campaign and get your candidates out there and engage in political activity. We're just working within a definition in an act in one place, and as I said, it's only the Federal Election Campaign Act. This doesn't have anything to do with ballot access. That's you're going to have to hash out at the state level. Any further discussion? I will call the question. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0, which is always nice. It wasn't explicitly stated, but I'm sure that technical and conforming amendments were included in that motion. Does council have any?
No, thank you.
Well, thank you again, Ms. Matthews, for your interest, for coming in here, and for your interest in participating in the political process.
Yes, very much. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Mr. Staff Director, do we have any management or administrative matters to discuss?
There are no such matters.
In that case, this meeting is adjourned.